This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Anecdotes of an Arab Anglophile. Acclaimed international journalist Faisal J. Abbas shares a witty and urbane insight into what it is to be an Arab in London. The good, the bad, and the occasionally ugly. Delighted to say that he's joining us, presumably live from London. Delighted to say that he's live on the line. It's Faisal Abbas. Faisal, good morning to you.
Hi. On the show.
That's good. Good to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about, for those who don't know who you are, what you do, and what led you to the UK.
Sum it up, I would say I'm a person who is curious by nature. Hence, I'm a career journalist. I am currently the editor in chief of the main English language newspaper of Saudi Arabia and the region called Arab News. I've lived in London, which, as you can see in my short bio on the book, has helped really shape my career for about 10 years. And this book is a reflection about those 10 years living here. It's mostly British society, London through Arab eyes. And I decided to release it now because I feel every time now I come back and visit London. I left in 2012, really, which was at the height of it, just after the Olympics and the Jubilee. I feel it's a very different place than the London I've lived in. So this is a kind of a reminder of what it used to be and a comparison to what it is now.
I mean, you describe it as a personal journey from Anglophobe to Anglophile. Was this a sort of, I was going to use the word roast to Damascus thing, but that might not be appropriate. But I mean, did it grow on you perhaps as the more time you lived in London?
Look, it's fascinating because, yes, as you rightly pointed out, I went from Anglophobe to Anglophile, but I feel with the amount of xenophobia, with the friction, with the polarization that's happening today in the British society, a lot of people are turning from Anglophiles to Anglophobe, and I certainly hope that is not the case. My experience with the Brits is that being nasty is utterly un-British. There's a almost in the DNA a sense of fair play, a sense of decency. So I do think the current political climate, the current rhetoric, is only a phase, and that it will go away very soon. But certainly, once we wipe the dust off, there's a lot of good things going on for London and for the UK, and I hope they build on their assets very soon.
I conducted another interview a couple of last week about a history of the Muslim world, and we were talking about this, and it seems very easy for those who maybe aren't educated, and they just say they tend to paint the whole world in broad brushstrokes and not look at the finer details, and that perhaps is what we're seeing at the moment. But I like the fact that you were used the word decency, because I think that at the end, hopefully at the end of the story, we're all decent people underneath.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And just by the way, I am not talking about the average Joes. I'm mostly talking about the political class. Mm. So let me tell you a quick anecdote or a quick story. I was here as a young new immigrant, but as a journalist as well, after the atrocious terror attack of July 7th. And you can imagine, and this was, remember, a few years after another atrocious terrorist attack of 9/11. And we all saw how the American officials reacted towards it. On the contrary, Sir Ian Blair, who was the head of the Metropolitan Police at the time, was asked at a press conference only hours after the incident whether he thought Islamic terrorism was behind these attacks. And, you know, he in a very statesman kind of way, he said, well, those two words cannot be used in the same sentence. You're either a Muslim, and there are many British Muslims who serve in the army, who are policemen, who are doctors, who are engineers, or a terrorist, and in which case, you have no relation to any religion. Imagine how reassuring that was for somebody who's a young immigrant who has nothing to do with this ideology, compared to the sort of rhetoric you hear today from people who are building on the current rise in populism to say things that all Muslims should be stripped of their British citizenship, trying to create a movement or a new party based on that, because they support Palestine or because they are opposed to, the practices of the Israeli government, for example. To which my answer is, well, you know, there's a lot of Christians and a lot of Jews who are also opposing the practices of Israel. So what do you do with them? Do you strip them also out of their British citizenship? And, you know, just so that I'm clear,
yeah,
every person is entitled for their opinion. It's not new for people to have nasty or ridiculous opinions. But what worries me is the normalization of such ludicrous views, which, I repeat, is completely un-British.
It's interesting you mentioned populism, because I'm speaking to you from a studio in southern Spain, which is in Andalusia, which was part of Al-Andalus and the Caliphate of Cordoba, and you only have to look at, and you have populist parties here who go on the same trench, and it's like, if it wasn't for the Caliphate of Cordoba, you wouldn't have Sevilla, you wouldn't have the agriculture, you wouldn't have the irrigation, you wouldn't have the water systems, and etc. So, you know, be very careful when you start saying, oh, well, they don't bring anything to civilization, because of this, my particular part of the world has benefited enormously from Al-Andalus and the 700 years of mainly benign rule.
Absolutely. Look, I have a view about this, and the view is, once countries start looking outwards, starts absorbing other cultures, starts being tolerating and opening up, whether it's the United Kingdom in its heydays, whether it's the United States, until a few recent years ago, whether it's countries like the United Arab Emirates today, Saudi Arabia, as of recently, Al-Andalus, as you mentioned, what distinguishes all these civilizations or empires or great countries and great moments is the fact that they've only reached greatness or became desirable or influential once they've decided to adopt a more open, a more tolerant, a more welcoming environment. It's almost inevitable that whenever you start looking inwards, whenever you put up your borders and you say, you know, and xenophobia starts rising, it's usually the signs of a decline of an empire or a decline of a nation. You mentioned Al-Andalus. I go there every summer. I visit the south of Spain. I make sure I go to Cordoba and Granada and places like Seville. And it's, the writing is on the wall. Statues, artifacts, all of them that shows that during the height of the Islamic civilization, there were a lot of Christian, there were a lot of Muslim philosophers and science living, coexisting in peace and harmony in an environment that enabled them to thrive. So you're absolutely right about saying that. And again, this is what I liked about the United Kingdom about 20 years ago, and I do feel things are changing now, not just for Muslims, by the way, but generally the feeling towards immigrants. Mm. And in no way am I encouraging illegal immigration to any country. The sort of rhetoric against the other, or blaming the other for one's own problems, whether or not you believe Brexit is a good thing or a bad thing, it's just the reality is it wasn't the other who voted for that. It was your own people, and then there were consequences. Whether they were good or bad, that's on you. That's not on other people, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's very easy to blame somebody else for the, if you like, your own problems and this mystical other, or this which doesn't exist. I mean, I was actually thinking about this morning on my, because I caught public transport. It was a 2-hour journey down from the place that I live, which is, like I said, 2 hours from here. And I was on a public transport and I was looking around me. The wonderful mezcla, the mix of people we had, were the people from South America, people from Morocco, people from whatever, and the languages and the whole thing, even at 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm thinking what a boring world it would be if we were all bland and all the same. And these people who say, well, you can only stay in this country if you have this DNA or you believe these things. I mean, what a bland world it would be, Faisal.
Again, it's very un-British and particularly very not like London. Remember, this is a place that has a city that has been inhabited by millions of people speaking nearly 300 languages. And there are books. I know my book is probably the latest about London, but for generations, for 100 years or so or more, there's been so many people that have been inspired by this city. I mean, just to name a few, and it has its ability, and for it to have this ability to inspire, it must have been a melting pot for people and welcoming for people, because if it isn't, you wouldn't have had Karl Marx, for example, writing his kind of sacred gospel for the communists, Das Kapital, or like the famous musician Joseph Haydn, who wrote his London diaries here. There are plenty of books about London, and they all share the same thing. And in almost none of them were ever referred to the British or Londoners as racists or as unwelcoming. On the contrary, people land here and fit right in, and they become great. And there are so many living examples today of people. Look at the British government at the moment. As much as one wants to criticize some of its decisions, but the fact remains that Rishi Sunak is the prime minister, that Sadiq Khan is the mayor of London, that until recently Hamza Youssef was the first minister of Scotland. So it's simply not true that immigrants are a net cost to the system, that they are here to reap the benefits and add nothing. I think it is completely unfair and doesn't do justice to the remarkable achievements done by people who genuinely believe in this country, who genuinely want to contribute to this country, and who have come here both to improve their lives and have improved other people's lives with their contributions.
The book itself, I couldn't help but notice that there seemed to be you've drawn from theatre, from literature. You've got everything from Great Expectations to Les Mis, and even Mind Your Language. And those of us of a certain age will remember that TV series, which would not be able to be made now. So for those of you younger, just go onto YouTube and find it. You'll be amazed if not offended. But why the Wolf of Shoreditch High Street?
So it's a number of things. First, I like to so there is no question that culture plays a remarkable role in shaping your perceptions, whether your preconceived ideas or reinforce those ideas. Culture is very important, and what I mean by culture is food, is music, and pieces of works of literature, and definitely TV series. So I try to pay tribute to every piece of work that helped me understand Britain more or build my preconceived ideas about Britain. And then each one of them relates to one of the chapters. So Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is saying how I felt when I got in 2003 the work permit or essentially Charlie's golden ticket to come to the Chocolate Factory, and me feeling that, you know, coming to live in the United Kingdom would be the equivalent of living in the Chocolate Factory. Remember the kind of fascination with the West the whole concept of a first world country, which leads us to the next chapter of Great Expectations, where you think that everything is perfect before you get hit with the reality that, yes, it's a great city, but just like anywhere else in the world, you know, the trains run late, streets are not made of gold, yeah. Rivers are not made of chocolate. Then you go into chapters like Alice in Wonderland, which is once you've adapted and you've gotten over your homesickness, trying to understand the ins and outs and the wonders of the British society. And I can name so many, but for example, you know, I still don't understand why a public school is called a public school when it's actually a private school, for example.
Yes.
Why do the British drive on the wrong side, or is it the right side of the street? And all of these sort of questions that come to your mind when you first land here, and you try to make sense of it. Wolf of Shoreditch High Street is so I essentially came to work with an Arab newspaper here, but I decided for my experience to be complete, I needed to work in a British company. So I worked with a British publishing house, which my manager at the time, who was the sales director, really resembled Jordan Belfort, who is the Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
Except we were based in Shoreditch High Street. So the chapter is called The Wolf of Shoreditch High Street. And you know, I'm a career journalist, but I took a 2-year gap and I worked in sales, and I didn't think I could do it. But, you know, like Jordan Belfort, my manager at the time, Simon, had a way to inspire and fire up people in a way that we were really exceeding our targets. And I made very good money selling advertising between 2009 and 2011. And of course, you remember what happened in 2011. And I was mainly selling to the Middle East. And then in 2011, the Arab Spring happened, which takes us to the next chapter, which is called Absent in the Spring, which is named after Agatha Christie's famous book about a lady who's been trapped between two train stations. And that's exactly how I felt. Of course, due to the instability in my main markets due to the revolutions, my short-lived sales career came to an end. But also the journalist inside of me came back to life, and I felt as the chapter says, absent in the spring. And I felt I needed purpose, which then again brought me back to the region. And here I am again, editor-in-chief of the region's biggest newspaper in English.
And the thing is, when I describe yourself as an Anglophile, but you look at the British perhaps in a way that the British don't. And we have a very peculiar take on life. I mean, if, you know, as a British person living in Spain, for example, how many times do I hear that people say, oh, I'm British, but I'm not an immigrant, I'm an expat, as if that's something different. And it's like, no, we're all immigrants. So we look at ourselves differently. And you can have a look at the British people and say, well, you do seem to have the British obsession with the weather, for example.
yes. So that would be in the Alice in Wonderland chapter. It's a compilation of a lot of things that don't really add up or make sense. So the British fascination with the weather is a fascinating matter in its own. It only reminds me of it actually doesn't remind me, it's just it keeps on reminding me the importance of let me rephrase it this way. I have a lot of respect to the creative ability of headline or news headline writers in newspapers and weather forecasts to constantly try and make British weather sounds interesting when it is really very predictable. As in, you do not live on these isles in a place like Florida, for example, or the majority of the United States where you have tornadoes and hurricanes, or in Asia where you have tsunamis and earthquakes. The British weather is pretty predictable. So it's either gray, miserable, and rainy, or nice, jolly, and sunny. And you either wear sunglasses or take on an umbrella. And most of the time you carry both because it can alternate in the same day. But you rarely get this extreme weather. Yet the amount or the percentage of talking about the weather and how much it consumes of people's daily life and following the weather forecast is rather fascinating. Another anecdote is the British obsession with queuing, which is very admirable, on bank teller machines at the supermarket. It's almost a second nature, except in the most British of all British institutions, which is a British pub. People who go to the bar remind me of if you've seen the movie World War Z, where the zombies are attacking the wall.
Yeah.
So there is no queue at the bar, except bartenders have a very unique ability to be able to identify who came first in a very remarkable way. You also have the famous British understatement, which I find also very admirable and very dignified. So, somebody could have just been in a, car accident, lost a limb, bleeding, and you would ask them, how are you? And, the answer would be, well, not too bad, considering.
It's been worse. Nothing much happened on the way apart from the loss of all my limbs. Yes.
Yeah. So it's very admirable. And, it's in a chapter like Romeo and Juliet, for example, which tackles the topic of romance. We have very different approaches being from the Middle East and very hot-blooded and passionate. In a way, it's not an argument about who's more romantic or who's less romantic, but there are clear and stark differences in how people express their emotions between the two, cultures. And it's, easy to point fingers and say, well, we think you are cold or we think you are over dramatic. But once you understand the gestures and the symbolic gestures and what it means for different people, you start understanding relationships a bit better. But it is fascinating, and that's documented in that Romeo and Juliet chapter, that, the English have went from probably being perceived as the most romantic people on the planet during the time when Romeo and Juliet came out, to being cast, to being the favorite actors to be cast as villains in Hollywood movies.
Oh, yes. Alan Rickman, etc. Certainly, I interviewed Stephen Burkoff, and I think that's one of the things that he's been cast as so many villains. It's just ridiculous. What do you hope that people are going to take from your book?
My hope is that people look at it today. I say this because, incidentally, now I live in Saudi Arabia, which is the last chapter, A Tale of Two Kingdoms. And it's a story of one kingdom in decline and another one on the rise. And again, I don't say this out of belittling or vanity or anything like that. It's, countries or nations are like products. They have life cycles and they go up and down. My whole takeaway is for people to remember that it wasn't that long ago. 20 years in a lifespan of a country is that not long. But 20 years ago, this place used to be buzzing, used to be full of energy. People wanted to come and move here versus now. Every time I come here, people ask me if I know anybody who's hiring in Saudi Arabia. You have British people who would love to go and work there. And, of course, that's a good thing for us. I am happy, but I also would love to see Britain regaining its balance, going back to what it was 20 years ago, where people looked forward to come and live here and contribute, and it was a much more enjoyable place to live.
The book is called Anecdotes of an Arab Anglophile. It's by Faisal Abbas, who we're speaking to today. Faisal, if people want to find you online, is there a website? Do you do the social media thing? Are you on TikTok? Where can people find you?
So I am on Instagram at faisal.j.abbas. I'm on Twitter at faisaljabbas. And I'm on LinkedIn. A bit too old for TikTok, I guess, but I might try to join it one day, but not at the moment.
And you'll be able to order the book from our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Anecdotes of an Arab Anglophile. It's by Faisal Abbas. Faisal, thank you so much for your time today.
Not at all. Thank you so much for having me.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.